All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to SaberSim DFS Office Hours. It is Friday, May 24th here. I'm subbing in for Andrew here today and a couple days next week. Andrew's getting some much-deserved time off around the Memorial Day holiday. So for those that maybe don't know me, my name's Jordan, the head coach here at SaberSim. Used to host this show, as it happens, and hosting here today. So welcome, everybody, joining in. Purpose of the show is open Q&A. So if you have questions for me about how to use SaberSim, DFS strategy, anything like that, you can fire away at me here in the YouTube chat. If you're watching on YouTube, our Office Hours channel in Discord is always a great place to ask questions. Whatever's easiest for you, we'll answer questions in the order that they come in and go until there are no more questions. So speaking of that, I think only one that I've seen in the queue right now. So we'll start with that question from Shaker300 here. And then if we don't have any other questions, I'll probably spend a little bit of time maybe talking about the baseball slate here tonight, just to kind of give people an idea of maybe how I would approach this slate, things that I think about. I know that's always helpful for people here, seeing me walk through that and let other people have an opportunity to ask some questions and go from there. So let's go ahead here and get things started. And been a little while since I've done this here. Had to adjust the setup around, move some things around to fit everything. So if sound or video is having issues or anything like that, if you can't see my screen, please just let me know. Anything like that, I'm happy to help. But Sammy, we'll get to your question in a second here. I wanted to start with Shaker since he sent this one in earlier today. If I don't select a contest field lineup grouping under the contest tab, will it default to none, flagship, or an average? I'm assuming it does matter. So I was looking at this here before I hopped on, and I don't really actually see a way to do this here, whether you're creating the contest sim from over here. The field lineups, I assume you're talking about contest field. This will default to flagship, so maybe that answers your question right off the bat, but I don't know how to a way to like make this empty. So presumably it's going to default to flagship, right? Same thing in the contest tab. Like all of the contests that are in here should default to a field lineups here. So if you're in a state where this is empty, I would just change it to something, because that seems like maybe like kind of a minor bug or something like that. A contest sim won't run without field lineups anyway. So if you're in that situation, you'll probably... You know, if you try to run the contest sim, it probably just won't work anyway. But I would just make sure that there's something selected here. And I think the default value probably is flagship in that case. So, but the second question, definitely one that comes up often here. If I miss lock and have a dummy lineup in, when I try to late swap, it still only swaps one lineup. Can I create a unique set of lineups so I can at least have some diversification? So like backing up from, you know, when you're actually in this spot, the best advice I can recommend, without a doubt, is get in the habit of filling your entries file when you register for contests. Especially on SaberSim, it's so fast to, you know, just quickly, like, I guess on DraftKings, you do need to make the two changes here, but say you have 150 lineups, just build these things, enter the first 150 by SaberScore and just get them in, and just make that a part of your registering for contest process, right? Whatever that looks like. I typically end up registering in the morning. A lot of times go through, like, this is what I'm going to play for today. Just fill them with real entries, because then in this kind of situation, you've got unique lineups in place. And if you miss lock, right, that happens to me from time to time, where I'll register for something and I'll just honestly completely forget I even registered to play it. Then you at least know you have real entries in there, and not a dummy lineup. So it's just way faster. You know, it only takes a couple minutes to knock this out and get those entries in there. Let's say though, you're in this situation and, you know, game started, you've got one dummy lineup in there. The easiest thing to do is to, what I would recommend doing here is to lock in the players that are actually in the lineup. So, and then eliminate the rest of the players in the pool. So let's say you're in a situation where you had you missed this first lock, and then it's like 5:30 or 5:25 or something like that. The next games are coming up and you've got 150 identical of the same lineups. What you can do is go in and identify the players from these early games that you actually have in your lineups here, and lock them in, right? So, you know, let's say you got a couple Mets, you go in, you hit lock, and then exclude the rest of the players from these games from your pool, then build the number of lineups that you actually have. And that will basically build you, you know, 100, say it's 150. That will build you 150 unique lineups while making sure that they're valid edits because you've locked in the players whose games have already started into those spots in the lineup. And then you can build 150 around that. That's probably like the easiest workaround when you're in that situation. But again, can't recommend enough to get in the habit of building your lineups, filling them with not a dummy single lineup that you just slap into DraftKings, but a set of like dummy early in the day lineups that are just a little more flexible if you end up in a tight spot later. Really does just help out there. So I think that's probably the best way to go about resolving that problem. I think I've seen other creative ways that people have come up with it in Discord before to try to fix that. I think that's probably your best bet. Another thing you can do, and I can't demo some of this stuff up very easily right now, but another thing I've seen people recommend before is actually take that CSV, right? And so you've got a CSV that's all the exact same lineup. Find, let's say, like, outfield is probably the easiest one to do this with because outfield has so many players in the player pool. You can just scroll down to like the min priced outfielders and find on the right side of a CSV on DraftKings, it typically has all the players in the pool available. And you could take that list, basically just find a list of 150 or so nearly min priced outfielders and just copy and paste that entire list of IDs and replace your entire like third outfielder with random min priced guys. And you wouldn't want to leave that in there, but that will uniqueify all of your entries all at once. And then you could re-upload that to SaberSim and then run a late swap. SaberSim is then going to identify that those are all unique lineups and then swap accordingly. So it's kind of another trick you can do here to get around that. I keep forgetting my camera's over here. I had to move some things around because I haven't done this live stream in a little while here. My other screen is over here. So I've got chat. I've got you guys over here. I've got the camera over here. I keep looking the wrong direction because I'm so used to having the camera on the other side. But anyway, that's probably the easiest thing to do. So, but yeah, best practice there is to put your lineups in ahead of time there. So, and then Samuel said, I understand that SaberScore looks at projection, upside, and ownership, but how do I identify if the lineup is chalky, balanced, or contrarian? It seems like as long as it's identified as plus EV, nothing else matters. Yeah, I mean, I think that is true to an extent. And that's kind of the value of looking at something like SaberScore or a contest sim, right? Is that when we say, you know, I talk a lot in my videos about how the right lineups that you want to play are a balance of projection and ownership, right? But that doesn't mean they're literally a perfect balance of those two, right? There's a spectrum there of, you know, sometimes that's going to be a lineup that projects so well, it can afford to have a little higher ownership. And sometimes that can be a lineup that is maybe doesn't project as well and maybe has like two contrarian stacks in it, but it is so low owned that it is kind of paying that back that way. And that's how the formula for SaberScore is set up here, right? So, you know, a lineup could have an immensely high projected score such that it outweighs whatever that ownership is, or a lineup's ownership is so low that it is punished less than lineups that project a fair bit higher than it that are much higher owned, right? So, I mean, in terms of ways that you could identify how much is coming from what, you can look at the projected score and the ownership, right? And get a sense, you know, especially using something like the aggregate metrics here, right? So we could say, let's put average projected score and average ownership up here as metrics. So you can see how lineups are grading out here. So this lineup is much higher owned, and average is, I guess, actually a little bit of a weird thing because there are going to be some exceptionally low projected owned lineups probably in this pool. But you can see that this lineup is higher projected than the average lineup in your set here. And this is a much higher owned lineup than the average lineup in your set. So you can kind of get a sense of where lineups are earning their share, looking at things like SaberScore from that perspective. You could also, another thing you can do, and this would require being on at least the SaberSim Pro plan, is setting up a custom metric that is basically something to the effect of ownership as a rank, right? I think sometimes these are a little bit easier. Let's just do ownership sum as a rank. I think sometimes ranks are a little bit easier to see. In this case, we want it ascending, right? Ownership sum. Oh no, we want this in descending order. Sometimes I think just rank is a little bit easier to contextualize when you're looking at it, right? So this is saying this is the 125th most owned lineup in the pool. And you could do the same thing with projected score. You could set up projected score rank, and you can kind of get to see how lineups are earning their EV, I guess, looking at something like Saber score. So I feel like my computer's being a little sticky on me here. I might need to reload this in a different browser here. I'm going to try turn an auto update off. This is a useful thing that does seem to improve performance a little bit sometimes. So if you're under the gun and you need to get things in quick and the app's getting a little sticky on you, auto update sources, turning that off can be helpful sometimes. But I might reload this here in Chrome because it seems like I am having a little bit of performance issues here. So let me take care of that real quick. Get this fixed here so we can have a nice smooth stream. Kind of a Firefox guy, always have been, gotten in the habit of using it, but this stream software does seem to like Chrome a little bit more. All right, let's give this a shot here. See if that works better. So Samuel, let me know if that helps. I think that's kind of a good way to break that up. You can create those metrics and just get a sense of where those things are coming from. Different slates are going to be different, right? We have a Coors slate tonight where you've got a team that's going to project really well. You're going to see the Phillies a lot in a lot of lineups, especially in SaberScore, because it's going to be hard for lineups to compete with them on just a projection level. And the ownership also isn't out of control tonight. These are actually fairly, we'll see, maybe they'll come up later in the day, but it's a 11, 12 game slate, whatever it is. These are pretty light ownership projections for a Philly stack. So not too bad. All right. A couple other questions that have come in Discord. Let's hit these real quick here. Does seem like the performance has already gotten a lot better. So hopefully we can keep that up. Any advice how to not get slaughtered in NBA Showdown? Every night when I sort by risk-adjusted ROI, I'm getting crushed at a 70% or higher loss rate. I watched the NBA Showdown video that was out as well. Yeah, so I did. I mean, I put out an NBA Showdown video last week. That's kind of representative of my core process for NBA Showdown. It's interesting to me that you are, I think there's two kind of competing ideas here, right? Like sorting by ROI might mean you are playing well, or risk adjusted ROI, right? They're gonna kind of give you similar lineups. That doesn't necessarily mean that losing, at a 70% rate means you're playing poorly, right? That was one of the components that I mentioned in that video, is that it still takes time to realize your profit here for these. So if we bounce over here to NBA. And run these, you will see it very clearly in the results of your contest, Sim, that a lot of your lineups expectation is going to be to not even cash, and their win rates are like a half of a percent, right? So it's going to take time there, and it might not even be something that you're able to realize before the end of the season, right? That's probably not a high enough time horizon to realize your profit in NBA Showdown. So I would do two things. The first is make sure you're taking advantage, and this was another part of that video, of the contest flashback tool as just a way to make sure that you are playing in a profitable way, right? This is tonight's slate. Let me see here. Back this up to yesterday. And coming in here and just making sure that even at, like, post-lock and after the contest is done, whatever contest you ended up playing, that your lineup still graded out as profitable. And if they didn't, and you're following the directions that I gave in that video, a lot of times when that happens to me, which it does happen, I like to go in and see like what's the discrepancy there, right? Like, why was a lineup that was projected to be profitable no longer profitable in the post contest sim? A lot of times that's a field lineup thing, right? Like, we do the best we can with our field lineups. We put a lot of work into our ownership model and our field lineups to look and see, what do we expect lineups to look like? But we're not always going to be right. So you can go in and see, you know, what was the difference? One thing I like to look at a lot here is the projected ownership versus the actual ownership, and see if you can tell a story of, you know, what happened there. Why did a lineup end up? And this is a little bit of a weird situation here where the projected ownership has gone to zero, but you can look and see what was the discrepancies between projected and actual, right? Obi Toppin is a really good example here on this slate. Projected ownership 31.6 came in at 46%. All lineups with Obi Toppin are now going to be, they're going to come in with a lower ROI than expected. So if you're looking in the post contest sim and your sim ROI is a lot lower than you would have expected or has even gone to zero, well, maybe having Obi Toppin was probably a big reason for that. That's something we look at too, right? In our review, then we go back at making models and saying, okay, like what about this situation led to that? Is that something predictable and something we can improve in our ownership projections in the future? But you can also look at that and say, you know, were there clues as to why that might have happened? Was there limited value elsewhere in the slate, right? Like, was it a value thing? Was it a narrative thing? Was it a coach speak thing? Was it a minutes thing? Like, what led to this player coming in much higher owned than expected? So that's kind of the process of review that should take place. And again, that what I'm specifically saying here is if you are finding that your post-contest flashback ROIs are low, that's what I would do. If your post-contest flashback ROIs are pretty high relative to other players maxing the contest and you're just not profiting, right? Like it takes time. The ROI that you see in a lineup is coming from its, you know, probability. It's probability of having that top 1% outcome is higher than expectation, but a top 1% outcome is still rare. There might be 10 slates the rest of the year, if we're lucky, in NBA Showdown, right? There's no guarantee that you're going to even be profitable, even playing in a plus EV way over the course of 10 slates. So, and you know, you should be managing your bankroll and your contest selection in line with that. So, Samuel said, I'm not on pro, but I've seen the aggregates. I've never used it. It's a great idea to get the lineup, the idea of where the lineup falls based on average. Yeah. Yeah. Really, really useful tool there. And that's a new one. That's a new feature that came out this probably in the past few months. So. Yeah. So Red Wings, let me know if that's helpful. I realized I kind of was bouncing all over the place on that. I think I kind of answered that question in two different ways, but it really depends on, you know, what you're seeing in the contest flashback. And I think using flashback as a tool to gauge how your lineups are performing, and if you need to make a change, or if you need to just, you know, stick it out a little bit, is one of the most valuable parts of having this tool at your disposal here. So. All right, this is a classic question. I feel like I've been answering this one for years. What's up, Jordan? Welcome back. Question. I always seem to have the bank in my build, but I can never get into my lineups pregame. What do I do in my backtesting to learn how to pull those winning lineups into my build? I wish I could tell you, because then we'd all be rich, right? The way I've always answered this question is it is an incredibly good sign that lineup is showing up in your build, period, right? That is not a negative thing that is happening. There, you get a 5,000 lineup pool. In baseball, for example, there are probably a billion, maybe more lineups that you can make, and you are getting these high upside lineups in your pool, right? That's kind of indicative that your process up to the build point is working well. You're building these lineups that are capable of having high upside scores. You should be seeing that, right? There should be in a 5,000 lineup pool built across this entire range of outcomes of the way that the games on the slate should be playing out. You know, you should be seeing, this isn't literally going to happen every slate, but 10 of your line or 5 of your lineups, 50 of your lineups should have a top 1% outcome in your pool. You should have like 50 of your lineups, if your lineup was like completely even in the way that it distributed players, would have a score that appeared to be a top 1% outcome, right? So that's a good thing, right? When that's happening. I don't know if I can, beyond saying, you know, using the contest sims to help identify what lineups are most likely to be profitable, I don't have a compelling answer for how you might find the lineup that is going to be the nuts in your pool ahead of time. I think that the contest sim, the way that that is working behind the scenes, is probably the most advanced way of pulling those lineups out that I can think of. A lot of the creative metrics and things like that that I used to use to try to identify those lineups and pull them out of my builds, I have retired in the name of just trusting the contest sim to, on average, over the long term, find those top lineups. So people have been asking that forever, of like, how can we, I'm building the bank in my build somewhere. How do I actually pull it out into my entries file? And I think that has always been a challenging problem to solve. And I have always answered that by saying, you should think of that as a good thing and know that you are going to realize that over a long sample. That is a good thing. That is also a good argument for why spreading out your lineups into as many entries as possible and following the profit plan is such a good idea, right? You give yourself more exposure to your entire pool each slate you play, and give yourself more opportunities of just getting any given lineup into your entries file. So, Ron, I'm not entirely sure what this question means. Any way to not miss the guys on a stack use min unique, but was getting the wrong guys? I'm not entirely sure what you mean. You could always set up rules if you have certain players that you think must be in a lineup for a stack to be used, right? So if you don't want, you know, you could do something like, if we're stacking up the Astros, we could make a rule and say, if at least three players on the Astros are used here, guys in something like this, and maybe we actually remove Yordan and Kyle Tucker or something like that, and you're saying, you know, if at least three of this group is used, then you have to use one of those two, something to that effect, or one of them, right? You could set up rules like that. I don't tend to like these kinds of rules in general. I think these are unnecessary for the most part, right? That the Sims are going to do a good job of picking up on what this rule is trying to do, right? The reason you would make this rule on a traditional optimizer is because an optimizer is just building based on the averages, and you're trying to teach it the characteristics of what makes a lineup have upside. You're saying, well, we need to correlate these players. The optimizer says, here's a bunch of numbers at this. This player has this projection at this salary, fit them into your lineups. And you say, well, actually, the Astros are more likely to achieve all higher than their average projections all at once, so we want to stack them. And the optimizer says, great, what are the best projected average players for the Astros? Give me these five guys in 100% of my lineups, right? And in this case, you would be getting Alvarez, I guess, in that case. But then you say, no, actually, you know, these two hitters are the ones that drive this offense forward, right? When the Astros go where Alvarez and Kyle Tucker goes. So if I'm going to stack this team, they're likely to succeed. I want to incorporate them into my lineups. So then you make this kind of rule. So you say, if we're doing this, then make sure one of these guys are in there. You're kind of teaching the optimizer step by step how to build a lineup with upside. When you build one with SaberSim, right, and you get an Astro stack, it's not just because it was the Astros' turn to get stacked or because they do well point per dollar on average. It's because that is a simulation of the entire slate, where the Astros stack was optimal. And across your entire set of Astros stacks, you will get stacks with and without Alvarez and Kyle Tucker, for example. And I hope I am answering your question in the way that you actually intended, but you'll get those players in your stacks at the rate at which they appear in them in a simulation of the slate. So you don't really, I just don't think you need to do this. I think it's probably just busy work at best for this kind of thing. So I feel very similar to about gaps in stacks. That's one that comes up a lot where people say, hey, you know, I'm getting gaps in my stack. I'm getting the 1, 3, 6, 7, 4. I don't know, something like that, where there's players missing from the stack. It's a very similar situation where that rule comes from traditional optimizers that don't have any basis for understanding the correlation between players. They don't know that players are, you know, 1, 2, 3 are particularly well correlated compared to 1, 6, 8, something like that, right? Well, the Sims do, right? If you look, and then they can balance the differences between those two, right? Who is Kyle Tucker most correlated to? Well, it's Altuve and Alvarez, right? When using Kyle Tucker, you should include those two players together. More, you should be more inclined to use those two players together. But where on a traditional optimizer, it doesn't have any basis for understanding the nuance there, why sometimes you might not want to, a sim does. A sim can actually calculate the value of this correlation and determine when it is worth it and when it is not worth it. So very similar there. What happens when I filter for dupes? I've been doing no greater than 2 dupes, but I don't know if it's hurting my selection pool or helping, especially in NBA Showdown. Yeah, I tend to like this. It's something that I often end up doing as well. Let me build some lineups here while I'm talking about this here, so we at least have something to work with. I like this. The main reason why, actually, I don't think we're going to do, let's do 1,000, because it does take a little while to build lineups for Showdown. So the contest selection or contest sim is taking into account duplication already, right? We have a field of lineups. We say this is what, you know, we think the field is likely to play. And then we sim each lineup in the contest sim against that pool and see how it performs. And that expected field does have dupes in it. There's 2 things on that. The first is that contest field is a 10,000 lineup field. It can't be bigger than that right now. So if you're playing contests larger than that, right, we're going to lose out on that nuance of this lineup that we think is going to be duped 10 times in a 10,000 person field might actually be duped a lot more than that in a much bigger contest. So we'll miss out on that component. And the other thing is our NBA Showdown field lineups are good, but I think there's room for improvement there. I think we sometimes miss how likely a lineup is to be duped on the high side, right? I think we do a good job of identifying the field lineups in general, in a general sense, but we might think a lineup is likely to be duped 12 times and it's actually probably going to be duped like 50 times. We miss a little bit of that nuance. That's something we're working on and hoping we'll be in a little bit of a better spot for next season. We did do a big improvement to NFL fields in the middle of NFL season last year that really dramatically improved that. If you were with us for NFL last year, you probably remember that happening where we did a much better job of picking up on the very highly duped lineups in the pool. That will be rolled out to NBA. Probably for the start of next year, most likely, and make things a little better. But I think we maybe underestimate the magnitude of how likely a lineup is to be duped sometimes. So all of that to say, I don't mind filtering lineups out that say that they're going to be duped. Even lineups, let's see, let's actually just experiment with this a little bit. So let's take let's say these are going into the mini max and let's run a contest sim and just see. The nice thing with the contest sims, though, is when you set up guardrails to protect your lineups. So I often end up filtering out lineups that don't grade out as profitable whatsoever and set up some aggregate metrics to see how deep into my pool I'm going. You can kind of be aggressive with the other things that you're doing. So, for example, let's filter out unprofitable lineups here. So ROI is greater than 0. And then set up some aggregate metrics here as well, say average ROI and min ROI. So these are kind of my like base guardrails that I tend to set up most builds here. I like this because it filters out the lineups that have a negative ROI, but then it also just shows me very clearly where I'm going with my build. So now if we also filter out lineups that are duped, so I do this one from time to time. Let's start with hide lineups greater than 0, dupes greater than 0. So this is any lineup that got duped at all. And you can kind of turn this. Well, I should have looked a little closer at this before I did that. But if we remove that, we're at 150 and 186.5, right? And if we add it back in, we're at 162 and 119. So we didn't really go down too much here. But what we did is we're now playing a set of lineups that's going to be even like less duped and is a little more safe in its ROI because it has, you know, it's projecting less dupes to begin with. So I think this can be useful. This is something that I've played around with. And, you know, the thing to be careful of with this here is different. This impact is different on different slates. Like I have seen this where I put this filter in and my ROI craters. Or especially if you need 150 lineups, right? I mean, I only built a 1,000 lineup pool, so you could obviously build out the full 5,000 lineup pool and have a little bit more lineups to work with. But I have done this before where I build 5,000 lineups. I run the contest sim. I filter out unprofitable lineups and it trashes like 4,200 of them. And then I filter out lineups that are duped even once in the contest pool. And I'm down to like 180 lineups and my ROIs are very low. Like at that point, maybe you're better off playing lineups and accepting a little bit of duplication in your pool. But this one actually seems like there's, especially if we were only playing 20 lineups, this one seems like we can do this pretty effectively. And you could start playing with things like salary too, right? Now we say also only show lineups where the salary is less than 49.6, right? Let's say like we want to play some lineups that leave some salary on the table, right? Well, now we're down to 116. Our lowest ROI lineup has gone down to 65.2. But in theory, we're capturing some of that ROI back by playing lineups that are less likely to be duplicated in a really large field tournament. So maybe we've gotten our dupes a little bit lower here, but we're kind of earning back the written ROI that we're trading here that you're seeing going down here. And we're earning it back in actual post-contest ROI if the lineups that we eliminated do come in a lot higher duped than expected. And these lineups are not as duped. So, yeah, I think. And again, I mean, if you don't know if it's hurting or helping your selection process, you know, go in and check in contest flashback, right? Did it meaningfully reduce your dupes? In showdown, like you will see, this camera is like slightly in my way here. You will see the effect that reducing your dupes has on your contest portfolio. Like if you go in and look, and check out the big names at the top of the flagship by Sim ROI, right? It's not no dupes, but there is a meaningful advantage gained when you start to get your dupes down. Large field GPP like under a 20-25 dupe average, right? It matters, right? Here, let's you can see how high the dupes can get and how low a average dupe of a 100, an average dupe count of a 150 lineup portfolio being 25 lineups or less actually is when you look at what the contest actually looks like, right? Or even 20, right? The top names are definitely doing things to reduce their dupes, and contest sims do that alone, but you can do a little bit more under the umbrella of the contest sim, right? So, Kuba said, for a 20 max and 150 lineup max, do you use the same pool? Do you use a separate pool for 3 max and single entry contest? So I think this does depend a little bit on what Saberson plan you're on. I don't like answering questions that way, but I think in this case it does. If you are on the ultimate plan and you can run contest sims after you have built your lineups, I think it matters far less. Let me get back to baseball here. I think that's a little more relevant for today, for this question. I think it matters a little bit less because you are grading the lineups based on how they would perform in that contest, right? So you can kind of think about it more as let me just build a bunch of lineups that are the best possible lineup for different ways that the slate could play out. You get 5,000 of them. And then I'll just play the lineup into the single entry and 3 maxes that performed the best in the contest sim for that contest. And I'll just play the lineups that did the best in my contest sim and my 20 max and 150 maxes into those. So, and you can just fill them that way. If you're on SaberSim Standard or SaberSim Pro, then I think it makes a little bit more sense to run different builds, because your greatest tool to affect like the differences in strategy between those contests becomes your slider settings, right? So in this case, you know, your single entry, you're playing, your slider settings are best at like 9 and 6, but if your large field 150 max tournaments, it's 10 and 8, right? It's kind of, where's your lever to account for contest dynamics? And in the ultimate plan, it's really the contest sim. Most importantly, it's the contest sim. On Standard and Pro, the levers that you have to control contest dynamics are more about the sliders. So I do think there's kind of two different answers there. It kind of depends a little bit on what your plan is. For me personally, like I would generally be building my entire portfolio in one pool and then running the contest sims for my different contests and filling those into there. So of course too, and this probably goes without saying, but if you're playing high stakes single entry as a part of your portfolio, right? And those are lineups that you care a little bit more about what those lineups look like, and you want to kind of handhold those into your entries file and make sure that you've basically handpicked those. There's nothing wrong with splitting a build off into a separate thing to say, hey, I'm going to do my, you know, my $121 DK single entry battery in a different build because I want to be involved in what lineup goes in there and what it looks like. That's totally fine. But like general advice strategically, I think it kind of depends on the plan and where your lever is for controlling contest dynamics. So. All right. All caught up on questions. Looks like about 70 of you guys here hanging out with me today. So awesome to see so many people in the stream. It's fun being back. It's been a little while since I've done anything live. So thanks everybody for hanging out here. Are there any other questions that people have? I'm sure there's somebody sitting there wondering something on your mind. I'll go ahead and give a little bit of time for some more questions to trickle in and talk a little bit about this slate. I won't be able to play this slate, unfortunately, today, but I can talk about kind of what I would be thinking about as I was building and just give people an idea of what my process tends to look like here. So we'll go ahead and do that. Pop any questions you have into the chat if you have them, but we'll assume we are building here for, say, something like this 150 max kind of contest. And reset everything so we can go back to normal here and build some lineups. If you watched the video on our YouTube channel, that is watch a DFS Pro build MLB lineups, this process will probably look very similar because it is my process. Same thing here. But for those that haven't seen it, I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that I see here. And the things that I just tend to look at, it's not an incredibly involved process. I try to keep things pretty lean and efficient when it comes to my DFS lineups most of the time here. But there's always, especially in baseball, there's a few things that I tend to look out for. Just kind of some opportunities to play a little bit more of a game theory angle on certain spots. So Neil's twisting the knife here on me. How sad were you when Denver lost? That was brutal. I'm going to avoid this becoming NBA sports talk radio because I will do that. I will let myself run away with talking about the Nuggets. But yes, that was a tough one here. So very, very tough one. But I don't think that we really had it this year. Like I don't think we had the right pieces. Even watching now Dallas and Minnesota play, I feel like the Nuggets would have struggled in this series and definitely in the next, like it, potentially the NBA Finals. So Neil's a Wolves fan. Well, congrats. That's good. That's good. I'm excited for the Wolves too. They're a fun team. So anyway, we've got the build up here. So we've got 150 lineups, pool of 5,000. Next step for me, I'm going to assume that this is just for the mini max. So let's get the mini max contest sim spun up here. Oh, that's fun. Let's say it's for the Mega Minimax. And this is a low stakes MME. And run the contest, Sim. Neil says, think the Nuggets got exposed for a lack of depth. They will be back. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping so. I hope that we at least explore some roster moves this offseason, because I think there are some issues with the team. Like, I think there are situations where a team gets eliminated from the playoffs sometimes, and it can be bad luck from variance, or just bad luck the way that the games went, or it's just not your year. Like, I am not always a believer that, you know, losing in the playoffs means you've got to make this, like, you've got to, you know, rock the boat a ton and completely make changes. But the Nuggets have problems, and we're capped out. And I think they at least need to explore potentially an MPJ trade. I don't think they would ever do it because of Jamal Murray's story, but I would listen to teams calling on him and just see if you could do a kind of deal where you acquire some depth and get rid of some of the players that make a ton of money and are starting the lineup, and see if they could become, you know, two rotation players rather than kind of like that fringe. I don't even want to say like fringe all-star, but just like solid starter into solid role players kind of split. But anyway, I'm not going to do it. This will not become NBA Sports Talk Radio. I promise. Okay. So contest sim is run. Next up, I'm going to sort by risk adjusted ROI and set up those same guardrails. I've gotten in the habit of doing this all the time here. I really like this approach. So let's filter out lineups that weren't profitable in our contest sim, and let's set up those aggregate metrics here. So we have average ROI and minimum ROI. And I just love doing this because, again, it just makes it so easy to see where you are at and just set up this backstop of lineups that now we can kind of have some fun with making adjustments, taking stands. If we've got a read on a player or a stack or a fade, right, we can do that. We're in this set of lineups that we know are profitable in the sim, and we're seeing the impact of that right away. So first of all, my columns are all weird. Let's reset these. Okay, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, so first thing I always like to check is the stacks here. And let's see. Camera is like in the way. Let's see. You guys get a nice shot of my door there. But I always like to check the stacks. Just make sure the stack types are ones that I like to play. In this case, this is a home run. No changes here. 5-3, 5-2, 4-4. I'm fine with some 5 stacks. I'm good with the 4-3 stacks. The correlation was cranked up to 10 here in our build. It's a large slate, so this is to be expected. I would say the lineups, the kinds of stacks that I always tend to be a little cautious of that you will see pop up from time to time are really a lot of these like 3 stacks, 3-3-2, 3-3s, 4s, 4-2s. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm always just jumping to eliminate them, but I will often like to go and take a look at those lineups a little bit closer, like looking at them this way and just seeing, you know, what's in the lineup, right? I'll play maybe 4 stacks with 4 one-offs if it's a lineup where the one-offs are all guys that have a ton of upside. Like this is a lineup that I maybe would not shy away from if it had appeared in my pool here. These are all guys hitting kind of higher in the order here. I've got some pop in the bats, and then you've got a Dodgers stack in it. Like that kind of lineup I don't think is too bad. It's profitable in the contest sim too, so it could pop up potentially, but I like to look at those stack types first. And then I'll go in and look at the team stacks here. First thing that I like to look at is to make sure that my curve of my exposures is, oh, I'm completely forgetting a very important step here, which is diversifying with min uniques. So that is the next step up. So the way I like to do this here, and you can see the impact that diversification has on your metrics here as well, but I like to do one less than whatever the max is that I can get where I'm still getting the number of lineups I need. So in this case, max is 6. I'd probably settle in at 5, maybe 4. I've kind of gotten in the habit of using 4 a lot this year when I'm playing 150 lineups. So let's do 4. And then back to the team stacks, this looks a little bit more like what I'm expecting. Most of the time, I like to see a soft curve here of my team stack exposures. I like to be really diversified, really spread out across my pool. If there's a team that is really popping in my stack exposure, I like there to be a pretty compelling reason for it. Like you can see even tonight, the Phillies and Coors far and away the best projected team on the slate, right? 20% showing up as my second most popular stack. That's the way I like it here. So there are situations where even when MinUniques is cranked up, sometimes I might have a team that's kind of running away here at the top. A lot of times that's a situation I bring down some exposure to, or that is a situation if I'm going to keep that high exposure because I like the spot or I think there's an edge there, I write that down. I write that down on a piece of paper. And the next day when I go into flashback and check how did my lineup 150 portfolio look, and I check and see what did other top 150 maxers do, I look to see if I see a similar thing there. Did those guys get, was my top stack that, you know, was far and away the highest exposed stack on my board, did other players get there? Other players that grayed out well in the contest flashback. And if they didn't, right, that might be when that comes up again in the future on a different slate, a situation I want to lower that exposure to. And I have found often that I think a lot of the sharp players are playing very diversified stacks. That is just something I found time and time again here. You see pretty smooth exposures. So that's what I like to do. And then let's go look at our pitchers. Pitchers, I'm kind of very slate dependent. I'm kind of open to being either concentrated or not. Depends on the slate. If there is, you know, a big time ace, which a lot of those guys have been hurt this year. Glasnow is maybe an example of one that like I'm still okay getting pretty heavily exposed to, but a lot of the like typical guys on that list are hurt this year. So I've been a little more spread out than normal, but I'm not looking so much here at the pitcher exposure to intentionally diversify or remove guys from the pool or anything like that. What I like to do is I like to look for opportunities to get a little extra leverage on the other side of guys that I don't like too much. The way I like to do this, and people that have watched me do the show for years probably already know where I'm going, is I like to pick on the chalky SP2s, the guys that are, you know, decent to, you know, average-ish pitchers pitching against maybe bad or average teams and not great parks. I think because of the way that average projections tend to work in these spots, they will always overvalue the pitcher, and the field tends to overvalue the pitcher in these spots. So I think there's two that really jump out. A lot of times these are like the 7 to 6K pitchers that end up being very chalky. So you can look at this, you can find them with the value column, or you can find them with the ownership column. So like not so much Justin Verlander, maybe I think there's an argument there. Not so much Corbin Burns, right? I'm not talking about like the top flight ace against a terrible team in the White Sox that I want to, you know, jam White Sox stacks. I'm talking about Patrick Sandoval, Christian Scott, those kinds of guys. Cheaper guys that project well point per dollar, that I think these situations just have a lot of variance. So I would look to see, are there opportunities to fade those pitchers? And I guess rather than specifically saying fade, right? I'm not saying, okay, I have 35% exposure to these guys, uncheck, call it a day. Really, is there opportunities to leverage some of this by getting some Guardian stacks and Giant stacks? The way that I look at that a lot of times, the way I answer that question, we're actually already getting the Giant stack, so love that, is with the pool exposure, right? And this pool exposure is how many lineups in our pool of lineups we filtered out to identify only the profitable lineups from our pool. Well, what percentage of those contain a certain stack in them? And weird slate tonight, 45% Philly stacks in our pool here. So these numbers are all a little deflated, but a lot of times I'm asking myself, are there lineups, like where does this lineup rank? Where does the stack rank in the pool exposure? And you can see, right, Giants are a top 7 stack. They're number 7 tonight in our pool exposure of profitable lineups. Guardians are right behind that. These are both top half stack teams. And that is just a product. That is just a number that is describing how often they're showing up in the best possible lineup you could build by fantasy points. But when we look at the ownership projections, we see like we're also getting some negative leverage on them because they will be very chalky. They're playing against pitchers that are going to show up in a lot of our opponents' lineups, right? We're getting that negative leverage there because people are even less likely to play Guardian stacks if they're using Patrick Sandoval in their lineup as salary relief. And I think there's upside there. So I typically will not adjust this from the pitcher side, but those are teams that I will like to get to. So we're already getting to San Francisco, so I'm not going to make any adjustment there, but I want to get to some Cleveland stacks here. So I would probably at least look at trying to make this a more heavily stacked team in my portfolio here. And seeing kind of the impact, maybe 15%-ish feels a little right. I might even like play with going a little bit higher than that. And the where I'm getting this number from is I like to, I maybe get about, you know, 2x the pool exposure here, right? Pool exposure saying, hey, they're coming in the optimal lineup in about 9% of the time. I want to double up on that because I'm trying to get some leverage on this situation. I'm not trying to get completely out of line with my exposure here. I'm not like, I wouldn't want to be 40% Cleveland stacks, but I want to be getting up there as a way to fade that. And, you know, sometimes this means I'm on the exact same other side in other lineups and I'm okay with that. Right. So I am here. I have 33% Patrick Sandoval and I have 18% Cleveland stacks. I'm good with that. I have no problem with that in my portfolio. But now I have this leverage on what I think is a fragile spot. And I just time and time again think chalky SP2s are always a fragile spot. I always do. Another thing that like I don't worry about is how those stacks show up in my lineups. I let the Sims and SaberSim kind of decide that. I don't typically come in here and say, I want to make sure I'm getting a ton of 5 stacks for this team. I don't come in and say, I want to make sure that's happening with many stacks. I let the Sims kind of figure out that component of it. And there's a lot of variation there. Sometimes it is the 5 stack. Sometimes I go through this process and it turns out I have a bunch of 5 stacks of the team. Sometimes I go through this process and it turns out I have a bunch of 2 and 3 stacks of the team. I just kind of let the Sims figure out that component of it. And then what I would do here is, so that's kind of like, that's probably all I would do at this point. I don't think I have other changes that I really want to force in. I would kind of go back and do one more sweep from the start. So I double check and make sure my stack types didn't get out of line, that I'm still happy with my stack types. And I am here. I'd come back and make sure that like my team stacks didn't get out of line. Nothing weird happened. I didn't end up all of a sudden like by bumping up Cleveland to 18%. I didn't completely lose my giant stacks. That would be something I would want to look into. Little things like that. I just kind of want to make sure that the general direction, the flow of my lineups is all still the same as it was. I've just made a couple tweaks. So, and this is how I tend to think about this most of the time, is rather than, you know, 11 games on the slate, I have an opinion on every single one. I have an opinion on every stack. I have an opinion on every pitcher. A lot of times I'm going through building the lineups, I'm running the contest sim, setting up the guardrails to make sure I've got this pool of effective lineups to play with. And what are the handful of spots that I think are an opportunity to exploit? And if it was this slate, I would say it's probably those Guardian stacks. That would probably be a direction I would want to go. So what's up, Nez? How's it going? Welcome. Doing my first live stream in a little while here, covering for Andrew today. So. But yeah, that's kind of the process here. For anybody that just jumped in, just finished up kind of walking through what I would call my base process of using SaberSim to build baseball lineups, how I approach most slates, especially for large field GPPs, where you're playing with, you know, 150 lineups and thinking about things more from the lens of exposure and on a portfolio level than rather than kind of dialing in and building one good lineup. I do have a tutorial also on our YouTube channel. Let me see if I can get that pulled up as well here. Talk about a little bit of the content that's on the YouTube channel, because we have put a lot out there recently. Some good stuff there as we start to kind of wrap up here for today. Okay, let me get this back up. Yeah. So first of all, so this playlist here, in the playlist section here, how to beat MLB DFS in 2024 is kind of our course for this season. All videos that I think are really helpful for MLB DFS, for this year. We just kind of walked through my 150 max process, which is, you'll see a very similar process outlined in this Crush MLB DFS, like a daily fantasy baseball pro video here. Very similar process. I do have a kind of guide to how I would build one lineup, or, you know, if you're playing a live finals qualifier, if you're playing a high stakes single entry, you just need one lineup. You're going to spend a little bit more time fine tuning and making sure that lineup is really good. This video, 5-step process to building profitable. And I think that's actually a typo. This should say a profitable MLB DFS lineup. So I do have an approach for kind of how I do that, very inspired by a lot of the same concepts. But that's a good video there. And this whole series, very useful, you know, if you're trying to get your feet underneath you using SaberSim for baseball lineups this year, it's a great place to start with that. So cool. Let me see if any other questions have come in here. Do a quick sweep around Discord and around the YouTube chat one more time. But Joe Max says, when I'm downloading the lineups, I only get the player ID. Is there a setting I can use prior to downloading to get the names? No, there isn't, unfortunately. Our stuff just exports just with the ID. You can get creative with Excel with like some index match stuff or VLOOKUPs and match those if you're trying to do that in like a separate, you know, whatever you're doing in Excel there. But our stuff just exports with IDs. So the way I've done this in the past, when I've kind of been playing around with some of my own Excel sheets, is just grab the projections file and load that into wherever you're putting your lineups. And just match those IDs to the player names on that source file is probably your best bet there. Dropping the ID into a macro so I can see the names with all the column data that comes with the download once the contest starts. Yeah, that should work. All right, cool. I'm not seeing any other questions now, and we are about at the hour mark, so probably a good time to wrap this up. I will mention, as always, if you are watching this and this is your first SaberSim video, and this looks cool, this looks interesting to you, we do have a free 5-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. So you sign up, get a free 5 days. It's actually a really good time for a trial. We've obviously got baseball going on every day, but we've got the NBA, NHL playoffs going on. We've got new NBA content on the YouTube channel. There'll be an NHL video dropping most likely next week. The French Open in tennis is coming up here next week. There'll be a video dropping over the weekend talking about tennis DFS strategy. That is a fully supported sport on SaberSim. We've got contest sims. We've got the simulations of each match. It is a ton of fun. Tennis DFS, I think, is super underrated, especially for the Grand Slams. The French is a blast. The US Open is a blast. Wimbledon is a blast. Like, the Grand Slams are super, super fun. Golf, obviously, going on. We've got a few weeks here now until the US Open, but it is basically peak golf season. That is a really fun sport. So just like a really good time to start a trial for SaberSim and get an opportunity to play a bunch of different sports over just a 5-day sample. So definitely check us out if you haven't checked us out before. In terms of stream schedule here, we are taking the weekend off here for the Memorial Day weekend. So the next stream will be actually Tuesday, and you can expect to see me on that stream again. Andrew will be back then on Wednesday and Thursday of next week, and then I will handle Friday's stream next week. So no Saturday morning stream tomorrow. And then no stream on Memorial Day on Monday, but Tuesday we will be back here and we'll be back in the saddle for next week. So appreciate everybody that was hanging out, tuning in, asking questions, just lurking and watching and listening along. Wishing Neil the best with his Wolves here in the Western Conference Finals. And I will see you all on Tuesday. Have a good Memorial Day. Thanks. See everybody.